Committee on Rules, Elections. House Committee on Rules, Elections, and Public Affairs. Thursday, May 13th, 1999, hearing room D.
The House Committee of Rules, Elections, and Public Affairs, May 13th, and an informational hearing at a subcommittee of the committee on SPR 10. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Vicki Walker, State Representative from Eugene, Springfield, and I assume after the informational hearing you can go in. Yeah, okay, great, thanks. Okay, I'm here today to testify in support of SBR 10, which commends a former state representative, Mary McCauley Burroughs, for service to the state of Oregon and the University of Oregon. The resolution is pretty explanatory. What we're trying to do is make Ms. Burroughs an honorary duck. And for those of you who came from Oregon State, I apologize. You what?
I'm a no.
Yeah. there are many reasons that we want to do this for Mary. She has been a dedicated public servant. She served Oregon with distinction and honor as a member of this body from 1973 to 1987, participating in more than 20 legislative committees and task forces. In addition, she's chaired the National Council of State Legislators and served as a member of the Governing Board of the Council on State Government, and was a fellow at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. Mary has been an outstanding advocate for education, including higher education. Former U of O President Bill Boyd relates that Mary's office was always a haven for education advocates and U of O supporters.
Here, and interrupt for a moment. This question has to be asked.
Go for it. Representative Byer.
If a Ms. McCauley Burroughs went to Harvard of the East, why would we not make her an honorary citizen of Harvard of the West, which is in Corvallis?
I'll pass on that question if I might.
Serious question.
Serious? Well, you would want to make her an honorary duck and not an honorary beaver, because that is the community from which she comes, is Eugene.
But she's already demonstrated her good judgment by going to Harvard. So why would I now exercise bad judgment to make her a duck when we can make her an honorary citizen of the Harvard of the West?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Byer, I would have to dispute whether we would call OSU a Harvard of the West, but that would be for another day.
Mr. Chair, I think she's trying to impugn my alma mater.
Has that beaver been found, by the way?
And I have
running. Thank you. Mary, one of the things I'd like to tell you about Mary is that I was a student at the University of Oregon in the 70s when she was serving as a state representative. And I majored in political science, and she came to one of our classes, and I was so impressed with Mary at that time, even though she was of the other party. She always had an open door, and Mary is a constituent of mine now, and she's now in another party. But I admire her abilities. I admire what she's done for the city of Eugene and for the university. She's always been able to find common ground with opposing points of view, Harvard of the East and Harvard of the West. And as a world-class research and liberal arts university, the U of O strives to ensure the free expression of ideas and promote democratic ideals. It's the university's central mission, and consequently, individuals who share this vision are highly valued. And that's why we ask you to pass this resolution today, because Mary has so touched and enriched our community. She also serves on the Board of Governors with the Oregon State Bar as a public member. She continues to be extremely active in the community. Any other questions?
Yes, question. I assume she is not here today. You hope to have her, still around, so you'd like to have her at the House session when this comes up?
Absolutely, Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Vanek. We have been trying to keep this somewhat of a secret so that we can surprise her, and I would like to extend courtesies of the floor when you do get that call.
We'll do that. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Are we in a work session?
We're in a public hearing.
Okay, do a work session.
Yeah.
Talk to someone else that you really wanted to talk to.
No.
Want the bill to get out.
I don't think there is.
And the good. As my son would say.
Mr. Wilhelm, did you want to speak on this bill? Okay. Then we will close. Any other legislator want to talk on this bill? We'll close the public hearing on SPR 10. We'll open a discussion on SPR 10.
Here.
Representative
Beck. SPR 10. To the floor to do pass recommendation.
Colleagues, have a motion on the floor to move SPR 10 to the floor to do pass recommendation. Discussion, questions? Seeing none, clerk, call the roll. Yes.
Aye.
Representative Edwards? Aye. Representative Nettie? Aye.
I'd love to, thank you.
So, motion passes.
Thank you.
We'll open a public hearing on HDM 14.
And I'd like to tell you that Representative Edwards is in the same committee I am serving, which is going right.
And colleagues, there are some dashboard amendments before you for HDM 14.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, District 37. With me are some of our esteemed colleagues. They have to leave, and I will defer to them momentarily. Basically, what we're proposing here is essentially gut and stuff, and we are proposing, this is a House Bill Memorial, to that we want to send to Congress for the purposes of encouraging them to passed legislation that requires country of origin meat labeling because ranchers are going out of business right and left because of imports of what may be unsafe beef and other sheep and pork products into this country. And with that, I will shut up and defer to the good representatives, all of these good representatives who need to leave. If I could jump in first, Representative Ben Westland, District 55, Central Oregon. If we're referring to beef, I'd prefer to emphasize the stuff as opposed to the gut. The necessity of this bill is, as my colleague outlined, due to dire economic circumstances with our ranching community. What we're asking for is a simple label. Could go on the film that all the beef is wrapped in.
Yes.
I would prefer that it identify the label of origin. If that is somewhat too onerous for this committee, maybe we could just identify that this is USA beef on all the packages that are USA beef. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Tom Butler from District 60. And I represent the beef country in southeastern Oregon, about a third of the state down there. Now, my brother-in-law is in the beef business, and things are pretty bad there right now. He got up the other night, heard some folks rustling around in his corral, and he came back to bed after a while, and his wife said, was somebody trying to steal some of your cattle? No, he said, I was afraid somebody was trying to unload some cattle out here. actually got into the business when prices were a little bit better, but they were still losing money. His brother was stealing the cows, and his other brother was stealing the feed, and when they sell the cows, they still lose money. Now, what I'm telling you folks is that there isn't a lot of money in the cattle business today, and when you have an opportunity to go to the shelf in the store and you see the country of origin being the United States versus Argentina or some other country, people will by and large choose American beef because of where it was grown, and they know that it was grown under the kinds of conditions that are important for us to survive on in this country. And so I'm imploring you that you would go ahead and stuff this particular piece of legislation, this amendment, into this particular bill to allow country of origin labeling, because this is very, very important to the people of Southeastern Oregon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it comes no surprise to the committee seeing me here probably as one of the beef producers in the body that really makes a living off of that, along with some other things. I want to approach this not from the idea so much of the price of beef. The beef is a cyclical industry, and anyone who's been in the beef industry knows that. You have good times and you have bad times, and usually the bad times are a little longer than we would like to see them. But I want to approach this as a matter of choice. I think that the U.S. citizens ought to have that potential to make a choice on what they buy and knowing where that product comes from. I think that's the major issue as far as I'm concerned. Those who might want to buy a product because it helps the economy, I think they ought to have that choice. We all know that the unions do a great job of talking about buy unions, and if anyone wants to do that, fine. I think that's a choice that they ought to be afforded, and that's really my position I'd like to make here today. And this is not a protectionist bill. I do not believe in a protectionist theory as an economist. That's not the issue here. The issue is simply giving the American consumer the chance, the choice to make the decision that they so would like to make based on the best information available. Thank you for giving consideration.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. And we also have any questions for interested in stuff, we'll be happy to sit here and take questions. And we also have Mr. Schoenbrink and Mr. Pete Cass being here to testify, Pete from the Oregon Farm Bureau and Glenn from the Oregon Cattle and Farm Agency.
Another, Mr. Chairman, and other members of the delegation who raised beef, I'll get into this.
Yeah, I'd be happy if you'd like to get on testify or have to say a few words, definitely by that'd be fine.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to quickly just hit some high points of why this is important. In America, we adhere to the strictest safety standards in the world in terms of meat production. And consumers are certainly becoming more and more suspicious about what they're purchasing for their families, and they ought to be. Food safety is a very great concern, and it's certainly the highest it's ever been on the list of what concerns the public. Imported livestock really is riding on the backs of U.S. producers that do such a great job, especially when they see the USDA stamp, because they think it's grown in America, and it often is not the case. It can be blended with a small amount of American beef, and Mr. Schoenbrink will talk about that later, and still be labeled USDA. And the impression there is that it meets all of our standards, and in fact, it may not. We produce a phenomenal amount of the world's beef, but we comply. U.S. producers comply with the toughest environmental standards in the world. We provide 80% of the habitat for wildlife, and American producers are good stewards of the land. The consumer doesn't know the environmental standards. Doesn't know what those environmental standards are when they're eating the beef that they've selected in the marketplace. So they don't know if it's truly American beef that's been grown to the standards we've established in this country or comes from another country that doesn't have those standards. We think the consumer has the right to know. We think they ought to know what it is and where it came from. What is it? Where was it produced? And we think it's honesty. We think, for instance, if a meat animal has been in the U.S. for more than 90 days, it can be labeled U.S. meat. That's an interesting statistic that I never knew of until some time ago. An animal that just spent its entire life can be labeled U.S. meat, but an animal that's been here for 90 days can be labeled U.S. meat. I think that's kind of smoke and mirrors. Some of the people will say it's too costly to track meat and meat products to the ultimate purchaser, which is the family that consumes it. Now, what's health and safety worth for our families? And I don't want to compromise mine. I'm sure you don't either. People say that opponents will say meat labeling is going to cost us billions of dollars.
and this is really just a desperate attempt to frighten consumers. You know, there's some great advertisements on television right now about Oregon fryers, Oregon chickens. I sure like that. I think that's great. I'm not going to talk too much more here other than to say that we import 320 million pounds of beef a year in this country, imported. 18% of all meat is sold.
Yes. Well, that's, yeah, that doesn't know I was a yes 3 minutes ago.
And in closing.
And in closing, we want to just build a fence.
I'm gonna let Mr. Stonebring talk about the yes.
And
Mr. Chair,
Representative Devlin. Right now, this is a 12-member committee, so you need 7 votes to pass anything out. And as you see, there are 7 members here, so.
The bill should pass. I'm Glenn Stonebrink from the Oregon Cattlemen Association.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Stonebrink.
Yes, Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. The bill should pass.
Colleagues, we will have a public hearing. Do you have any questions, please? Yes, that's empirical.
Just comment. This is a real feminist kind of bill here where 86% of women between the ages of 35 and 54 support the labeling of meat by Kent. But I just want to express my appreciation and being a pro-choice kind of gal. I support that.
Mr. Chair, we thank you all for your indulgence and we lead you to your work.
Thank you for coming to an HCM 14 and open a work session on HCM 14, Mr. Chair. If there's any start,
move the dash one.
Is there a cause of motion before us? Move the dash one amendment to the HCM 14. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so move. Versus R.
Chair, I move HCM 14 as amended to the floor of the House recommendation.
Colleagues, have a motion before us to move HCM 14 as amended to the floor of the House with these House recommendations. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so move. We will close the public work session on HCM 14. And for the next item on our agenda,
Mr. Carrier,
with a wire or with a truck.
Okay,
sure. If he doesn't wear his leather.
He cares when he thinks he may carry the bell. One of those in the truck, right?
Representative Crump. I'm figuring out what he's saying. Atkinson would like to carry the bill.
Sure.
Representative Atkinson will carry the bill.
Oh, yeah.
We have
cows on the side.
Oh,
right.
Down
in Texas. Which bill are you here for, Senator Lynn?
SDR6.
Okay, we will flag. Now open a public hearing in SDR6.
Thank you very much, Chair Simmons and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Lim, a state senator, and I do appreciate the hearing the bill. I share a lot, HCR 6. HCR 6 is a bill that proposes the amendment to the Oregon Constitution to establish the Office of the Lieutenant Governor. Oregon has never had a lieutenant governor, and perhaps it was not necessary in the past, but the time has changed, and we can see even greater changes in the years ahead. If we don't change, time will force us to change for better. Oregon has been fortunate to have a strong governor to lead our state. Our past governors have done a great job. I believe even more could be accomplished if there were a strong lieutenant governor to share his or her responsibility. If they are sick, it requires the independent election for governor and the lieutenant governor. It could happen that the winning candidates are from different political parties. That is, the democratic process let the best man or woman win. It is my belief that in the years ahead, the people of Oregon will need strong leadership to maintain and improve our position in world markets that are becoming increasingly competitive. Under SJR 6, the Office of the Lieutenant Governor will work to promote economic development in this state and will be on the important liaison for the governor. The Lieutenant Governor may also represent the state in negotiations of interstate and federal issues, but only at the direction of the governor. And the Lieutenant Governor will serve as acting governor upon a written notification from the governor. This bill does not usurp the power of the governor. It establishes partnership for the governor. In committee, which I was the chair of the State and Economic Committee, we heard testimony from Pacific Northwest International Trade Association that it is important to have high-level state officials available to meet with foreign dignitaries who visit our state. If you remember, a couple of weeks ago, we had visitors from the ambassador from Korea and ambassador from United States. Both of them came to visit our state capital. And at the time, one of the ambassadors asked me, where is the governor? And I told them that the governor is out of town for visit schedule. Then they asked me, where is the lieutenant governor? And I told them, we are working on it. So, you know, that we might be able to have one with your support. Oregon business tells us that high-level state support and visibility is important when they try to establish business relations with other countries. The Oregon Economic Development Department also spoke about the value of having additional sub-officials to help extend Oregon's influence with foreign businesses and government. Sometimes information about foreign visitors is not conveyed to the capital in time for the governor to be available to greet the visitors. This is an embarrassment to our state and to the visitors. The presence of a lieutenant governor would alleviate those problems. The committee received the testimony from the lieutenant governors in California, Nevada and Washington. Each one spoke about their strong partnership with the governor and the success from working together. Governor Chitaba wrote a letter to me, as you have the copy in your file, stating that he is neutral on this bill and stated that he believes the debate on this question would be in public interest. I urge that the Chair Simmons and the members of the committee to approve SJR 6 and allow the citizens of Oregon to choose whether they will join the other 42 states of the country who believe that the Office of the Lieutenant Governor brings values to the state. In the Senate, we have a 5 ayes and a 4 noes. This is simply different to the people, so people could make a choice. If we pass that from the both house, the 2000 will be go to the people, and then 2003 we will have a lieutenant governor. So next 2 biennium, we will not have any fiscal intake at all. Thank you very much. I will go open any questions. I have enough material to study. I want to show you, and I did my homework.
Questions from the committee for Senator Lynn. It doesn't appear there's any questions at this point, Senator Lynn.
Well,
listen, Beck.
I'll ask you something here. Maybe I missed this before I came in. How many states?
42 states already have the governors, and our neighboring states in Washington, California, Nevada, Hawaii, they all have lieutenant governors. I'm not saying they have it because we need to have it. That's not the point. It's a necessity for our state to compete all around the world. Simply, I want the lieutenant governor to be a salesman for our state to bring more bread and butter to the people of the state.
Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Sir. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Anyone else have a time to go today? I'm interested in the pleasure of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, sort of whimsically, I was wondering if we could have that as part of our slogan. Take with no sales tax, no cross-word cash, no lieutenant governor.
Eight models.
I'm just being a little facetious today. I'm sorry. It's a long day.
It's a long day. Well, I would entertain any discussion. I would like to know if the pleasure of the committee is.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Well, maybe Senator Lynn can answer this. Have there been, creating a new state office is a pretty big deal.
How did you hear?
Creating a new statewide office holder is a pretty big deal.
Yes.
Have there been any of our more civic-minded people in Oregon, former Supreme Court justices, former governors, statesmen and women who have thought this through and reached the conclusion that we need to do this, or just an idea? And we all have ideas that come out that
yes.
of our own, and it's, that's fine. But I guess I'd like to know that there's been some sanctioning outside of the Capitol from people who've been involved in Oregon government that this is something that merits a vote of the people at this time.
Thank you, Chair Simmons, and thank you, Jack. So this is a big deal for our state. We never had a lieutenant governor in the past. As I mentioned, the time has come. Sometimes it is very difficult that the keep his mind. We never had it while we need it. And I have been working on this the last 6 years or more or so. I think people begin to change their mind. We might need it in this coming 21st century. Certainly that the governor kicked up or she saw it. So that's why he's staying on Moosa. And then I talked to the governor here. She said, that's a bad thing. And she's against it. Even he told me that when we pass this bill out, she said she will be the chairman against this bill. That's fine. That's what people decide. That's the country. And I respect his decision to anyone else's decision against and for it. I think it's about time you ask this bill to the people.
All right, any further questions or discussions from members of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Griffin Devlin.
It's interesting to me that it does seem difficult to get something like this onto the ballot through the process here in the session. It also seems difficult in the past when we've tried to take some statewide elected offices and convert them to appointed. I mean, there have been two cases, the superintendent of public instruction, there's no discretion there, which actually supported the side's making a permanent position, and the commissioner for labor, which I don't support, making a semi-permanent position. But it seems to be a very difficult subject to get through this building, whether you're adding or subtracting from those losses. I wouldn't really have a strong objection to putting it on the ballot. I think that it would be worthwhile, since there hasn't been a discussion of this in the state, probably in recent history, to have that discussion.
Well, thank you. For other members of the committee? Yes, Mr. Starr.
Thank you. Senator Lynn, do you have an idea what kind of fiscal cost this position having this office add to our state budget?
Okay, I looked at the budget in many other states. It's coming from $200,000 from state to $3, $4 million. My belief is this, I consider this is an investment, and then if someone capable lieutenant governor, if the person brings even one industry to our state, that will bring billions and billions of dollars. So with a smallest investment with the position of the Lucina governor not only create a goodwill around the world, that we are talking about opening up the office in China, which is 1.2 million people. We need to extend our trade to Africa, and simply we don't have enough people going out to sell our value-added product. And so that even that the $100,000 to several million dollars is up to the legislature. So currently we have another companion bill. I think it's that in 2 years it could cost with the secretary and plus a member another, and it could cost maybe about the...
How much was it?
I think it could be more than that. It is a minimum amount, as far as I'm concerned. And I've been fortunate to work with the governor to bring the Hyundai industry to Eugene area. You know, they invested $1.2 billion. At this point, they are hired about 400. They expect to hire more than 1,000 people. So, with the lieutenant governor working with people that the others, if the person is capable, shall be able to bring a lot of the high-paying jobs, which will be still paid for even 100 or 1,000 times more what the person paid for from the state.
Sure.
Is that right?
Well, with all due respect to the Senator, it seems to me that if we wanted to have an international ambassador of goodwill or of trade, we could establish such a position either just through agency appropriations, or we could ask the governor to establish such a position, or we could, by statute, designate a position that we'll call it the Oregon International Trade Ambassador and have somebody appointed. And then, of course, if it doesn't work, we can always undo the statute. But you've talked constantly about the need to have a lieutenant governor in the context of economic development, and it seems to me you don't have to have a lieutenant governor to have someone who speaks to the governor, speaks to the state, and travels around. It could even be an honorary designation given to some retirees, a handful of people who might be Oregon's international trade ambassadors who can go to different countries, and maybe we'd even pay their expenses but not have to pay them a salary and run an office and all that stuff to try to boost trade. What would you think about that as an alternative?
That has been my thought also. Even today, I discussed with my staff, maybe someone suggested, maybe even governor might be able to that you appoint an ambassador. But I don't know whether it is a better idea than the lieutenant governor. Certainly, that the number two man elected by the people will have more clout to meet other people. And then, especially we are doing a trade with Asian country, more than 50% of our total trade. We have even last year alone close to $10 billion, which is about 60% of it being Asian country. When the Asian people coming over here to the opportunity for the trade, they looking up the man, top man, top lady to meet with them. Certainly, lieutenant governor will be able to available when the governor is not available. So, business relationships sometimes happen with a personal relationship. And when they meet one of the top person in our state, they can say it's a great honor. They have something to bring back and talk about with a picture. That will enhance the relationship and bring about more business.
Thank you.
Senator Lynn, thank you. My sense from the signal from getting to some of the committee members is that we need to lobby them a little bit further. I'm going to close the public hearing, and I'll be happy to set the bill again whenever you get a chance to visit with members of the committee.
That's fair enough.
Thank you very much. Yes. Yes, you may. Please.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Azel Gordley. I represent Senate District 10, which includes neighborhoods in southeast and northeast Portland. My district is also It's bordered by the Columbia River, and the Portland International Airport is also a part of the district. I have the privilege and pleasure of serving on the Senate Trade and Economic Development Committee with Senator Lim, and hadn't taken note that this particular bill was up today, but I do encourage you to take a close look at the bill and the opportunity that it presents. We have some magnificent trade opportunities awaiting the state in areas of the world that we've not yet explored. Latin America, Africa. I heard a part of the testimony that the senator presented, and I just want to say to you that we need to take a very close look at how we are currently structured through our Oregon Economic Development Department and in the governor's office, how we're structured to receive and outreach to these different economic markets and opportunities. And this is not a criticism of anything that is currently going on in the Economic Development Department or in the governor's office, but I'm here to say that we may not be exploiting, and I use the word in a positive sense, the opportunities that exist to the degree that we might, just because we don't have the right arrangement in the governor's office. And if you look at what some of the other states have done, I think Arizona would be one of those. I think there's some things that we can learn. So I'm just basically here to say that I support the bill. I support what Senator Lim has brought forward. I think there are some serious issues, and I would hope that we would not minimize or trivialize the issues that he's bringing forward and really take a serious look. And I will join him in lobbying each of you. I would really hope that you would move this out of committee and to the House floor where a debate can take place.
Thank you very much, Senator Gordon. Sometimes the people have to have an opportunity to warm up to an idea, and this is certainly a good introduction today. Thank you so much for coming. We'll close the public hearing then. And Senator Gordon, you are here for SCR 7 and 8?
Yes.
Would you care to come forward? And we'll open the public hearing on SCR 8.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good afternoon. This is a, again, it's an honor for me to be here and to bring this resolution forward in memory of McKinley Burks, Jr. And I appreciate having the opportunity to share something of his life with you. And I wish to borrow from the remarks of a gentleman in my district, Mr. Kamal Siddiqui of Portland, who provided testimony in support of this resolution at the Senate Rules and Elections Committee hearing. Mr. Siddiqui stated at that time that, and I quote, "In the African tradition, it is said that when an elder dies, the village loses a library." And that is what we suffered when Dr. McKinley Burke passed on. I can assure you that this does apply to McKinley Burke. He was an extraordinary teacher, a scholar, a community griot. McKinley Burke was the first African-American licensed accountant in the state of Oregon. He published and that was back in 1944-45. He published a seminal work on African-American invention titled Black Inventors of America. He dedicated tremendous energy to education and was well ahead of the curve in many respects in this area. For example, he envisioned the use of and need for electronic computing in the 1960s and introduced this concept to the Dallas public schools in 1966. This was after the Portland public schools rejected his proposal to start the efforts in that district. So again, the concept was implemented in Dallas, and just consider that, again, it was 1966.
May I interrupt?
Yes.
You don't mean Dallas, Oregon. You mean Dallas, Texas?
I mean Dallas, Oregon.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I do.
Really?
Yes, I did.
Wow.
Interesting.
Professor Dallas, Oregon. Professor Burt was acknowledged for his contributions to public education at the National Conference of the National Alliance of Black School Educators, which was held in Portland in 1989. At Portland State University, he enjoyed a lengthy tenure as an instructor in the Urban Planning and Black Studies program, being widely respected for his acumen as a teacher and critical thinker. He brought passion to his teaching and inspiration to his students. Professor Burt provided years of consultation on diversity-related issues to local, state, and federal agencies. His work in this area includes the City of Portland, Multnomah County, the U.S. Forest Service, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. As a journalist for 15 years, he wrote as a columnist for the syndicated weekly newspaper in Portland, the Portland Observer, which I believe some of you are familiar with because the Portland Observer is distributed here in the Capitol. Colleagues, I close my remarks just asking for your support today and again calling on the words of Mr. Siddiqui, who said, and I quote, that the state of Oregon is doing the right thing by honoring one of its most treasured citizens, and that was Professor McKinley Burt, Jr. May we have all life, wisdom, and power like the sun forever. And I thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gordon. Any questions for Senator Gordon?
Yes.
Just a couple. First of all, I also took a look at SJR 7, and I appreciate the nice job that's done in the presentation on this one. I'm curious, are we making sure that after these resolutions are passed, that materials are passed on, say, to the Oregon Historical Society?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They will be passed on to the Oregon Historical Society, which is most familiar with both of these gentlemen's work. And then also, the Black United Fund of Oregon is establishing a museum in Portland, and some of their writings and works will be on display there as well.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? We have no one else to testify, so I'll close the hearing on SCR 8. Open a work session on SCR 8. Do I have a motion? Representative Manning.
Mr. Chair, I move that we send SCR 8 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Maxson?
Excuse.
Representative Depp?
Aye.
Representative Meyer?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Excuse.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Maddox?
Aye.
Representative Piercy?
Excuse.
Representative
Connors? Aye. Representative Welch? Aye. Representative Williams? Excuse. Representative Simmons? Excuse. I have a required number of votes. SCR passes onto the floor with a blue pass recommendation. Is there a volunteer, Sherry?
Mr. Chair, I have a request, if you may. I have not talked with Representative Mannix about this, but we shared what I think was a remarkable experience the day of acknowledgement. A couple of weeks ago, we sat together on the House floor and had the opportunity to share some heartfelt comments. And I would consider it an honor if Representative Mannix would consider carrying both of these resolutions.
And for the well, I'd be
honored.
And you're being too kind, but I just...
Okay. Representative Mannix will carry your SCR. We'll move on to SCR 7. I'll open a public hearing Senator Gordon.
You're right.
I
never go my
time. Okay.
You're right.
Yeah.
Are we ready? Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, again, it's with a great deal of pride and deep historical sensibility that I bring this resolution before you. I, in memory of William H. McClendon, who is someone known to my family going back to the 1930s in Portland. I am keenly aware that a person whose life ended so recently, and actually that was on August 5th, 1996, can invoke in me such a deep sense of the history and achievements of African Americans in our great country, our great state, and most certainly in Northeast Portland. And that is because William McClendon was intellectually and spiritually a very powerful and profound person. Undoubtedly, his memory will live for a very long time. And I come to you in what is the last legislative session of this century, asking that we memorialize this great African-American Oregonian, who unfortunately is not as well known as he should be to many of us. And so this is also an effort to insert his name in our history, and hopefully his name will become better known. The accolades to Professor McClendon are many. He was truly a multifaceted person. At the time of his death, the Oregonian acknowledged the breadth of his academic and cultural proficiency, describing him as a pioneering black journalist, historian, educator, and jazz musician. He plays piano. Playing the piano sounds like an understatement. He mastered the piano. And the Oregonian also reported that Mr. McClendon was hailed by the National Association of Black Journalists and many colleagues as one of the nation's most prophetic and influential intellects. The contributions to the communities of Oregon include his work as director of the Black Studies Program at Reed College, beginning at its inception, and as a faculty member at Portland State and Willamette Universities, teaching Black Studies and introducing Black Studies projects. Professor McClendon was chairman of the NAACP Portland chapter, was deputy director of affirmative action for Governor Vic Atiyah's administration, and a very fine litany truly exists of his, of William McClendon's contributions, leadership, and scholarship. We are only talking about a few of his contributions this afternoon. But again, I close my remarks by requesting your support for this resolution, which will memorialize a truly great Oregonian. And I would encourage each of you to request that the library here and our legislative library send to you some of his writings so that you can become familiar with the body of work that he produced. Particularly through the years about 1936 to the early 1990s. He was writing about life and times in Oregon, and he was writing from a political perspective. And there's so much there that we can draw on today. And again, I thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for hearing this resolution.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for the Senator?
Chairman.
Yes, Representative.
Just a comment. I want to thank Senator Gordley for bringing both these resolutions to us today. Senator Manis and I have been chatting about them and the nature of the resolutions we get in front of this committee, and you know, a lot of it's same old, but you know, I think if we really, any of us, sit and think of what it, the, I don't know if it's difficulties or just the different types of issues that an African American would have faced in this state to achieve notoriety before 1970 or 60, you know, hurdles were higher, and often those people in a state that is very, very small African-American population, people who are achieving in that community have not received the recognition they certainly deserve, and I'm glad you're bringing these to us and setting a record, helping set a record that these and other individuals certainly deserve. So I'm glad you're doing this.
I appreciate those comments very much, Mr. Chair, Representative Beck. Both of these men were great men, great Oregonians. They had national and international reputations. And again, it's an honor to be here this afternoon, and I appreciate your support.
Any additional questions from Senator? Hearing them. Thank you very much, Senator Gortley.
Thank you.
No one else signed up to testify. Close the hearing. Open a worship session on SDR 7. Do we have a motion,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I move that SDR 7 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Any discussion? Hearing
the comment?
Yes.
I again want to reiterate what Representative Beck had to say, but also we were commenting, too, about how nicely crafted these pieces were, and I appreciated the presentation by the Senator. Sometimes we don't get things that are as well crafted, and this is a nice way of presenting this information, and I really appreciate it.
That's very nice. Okay. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Atkinson?
Aye.
Representative Beck?
Aye.
Representative Heyer?
Excuse me.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Excuse.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Representative Maddox?
Aye.
Representative Kennedy?
Excuse.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Welch?
Aye.
Representative Williams?
Aye.
Harrison?
Aye. Having the required number of votes, SDR 7 passes to the floor with due pass recommendation, honoring Senator Gordley's previous request. Representative Maddox, please carry.
Gladly.
We'll move on to SDR 11. Senator Yee and Representative Krupp will come forward. Yes, you may. Open the hearing on SCR 11. Please proceed, Senator Yee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Senator Yee, representing Senate District 19, which consists of portions of Lane and Kenton counties. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on behalf of Senate Concurrent Resolution 11, a memorial for the late Representative Ernest D. Bud Byers. Representative Byers passed away in Lebanon last year on February 6th. He was 71 years old and had served in the Oregon House of Representatives from 1971 to 1981. During his tenure, he served as the chair of the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources and Energy and Environment. I had the pleasure of serving with Bud during my first two terms in the House a long time ago. I have many fond memories of him, but I do have one favorite story about Representative Byers. When I was a representative serving alongside Representative Byers, a bill that dealt with field burning of grass fields after harvest came up. For some political reason, it was assigned to three other committees, but not the Agriculture and Natural Resource Committee. So Bud Byers, myself, and several of the rural area representatives started a not-too-small rebellion to get this bill heard in the Agriculture Committee. after causing quite a stir, we managed to get the bill properly placed in the Agriculture Committee, where it had a good hearing and the issue was fairly resolved. I believe it wasn't for such strong commitment to the farming community, the bill would not have had a fair hearing. Representative Byers provided a great deal of contributions and services for Oregon. He was a driving force in the founding of the Oregon State University School of Veterinary Medicine, the Lane County Humane Society, and also served as the director of the Willamette Valley Rehab Center, among many other accomplishments. Bud Byers was a true citizen representative and a dynamic leader and role model for all of us public servants working for Oregon community. And I urge your support of Senate Concurrent Resolution 11. And I would like to introduce Bud Byers' widow, Judy Byers, and Grace Gant from Albany, who requested Senate Concurrent Resolution 11, and Foy Oster from Albany, and Representative Cross co-sponsored the bill with me. And if you will excuse me, I have to go back to my office. I have an appointment.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Your testimony is very appreciated. Representative Cross and then Ms. Byers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The colleagues, and again, is for the record, my name is State Representative Jeff Krupp, District 37, and I am indeed honored to be able to come before you today and ask you to consider this. This gentleman was, and his lovely wife here, were supporters of mine. He is the predecessor of the predecessor that I replaced in this office. And he was a very able representative, very fine representative. And an excellent man. He worked hard for his constituency, and he set a standard that I intend to and am working hard to fulfill also. So I would very much ask that you would certainly consider passing this down to the floor, and I would be honored if you would consider allowing me to carry this forward on the floor. That's the response.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Only if you will not dress up.
Mr. Chair, I can assure you that I will wear more appropriate clothing. And I apologize for my appearance, but as you obviously know, I've been involved in other bills today that were more appropriate. Thank you, and I also need to.
Representative Krupp, I will confer with Representative Simmons, and I'm sure he'll be proud to honor you as well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff.
Ms. Byers, please.
My name is Sue Byers, and I'm here today to speak and support Senate Concurrent Resolution 11 and to thank the most honorable Mayor and Representative Jeff Krupp for sponsoring the resolution on behalf of my late husband, Bud Byers. Bud always said that he didn't belong to any organized political party. He was a Democrat. Bud loved politics and strived to bring positive change by working within the system. He exemplified in the truest sense what our founding fathers intended our state legislators to be. Bud was a working legislator who laid down the tools of trade to serve during the legislative session, returning to his job in the spring when the legislature adjourned. But Bud had a strong basis. He had strong basic values, right and wrong. Retiring from Bud did not mean retiring from politics. Bud loved politics. Bud's presence is greatly missed in our community and certainly by his family.
Thank you very much. Ms. Kim.
My name is Grace Camp, Mr. Chair, and other members of the committee. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm here to speak on behalf of the Senate Concurrent Resolution 11. I strongly support the passage of this resolution honoring the late Honorable Bud Byers. Bud's commitment to public service spanned his lifetime. Bud's concern for his constituents is the true sense of the word for the public service. Bud not only worked on his constituents' problems, but he helped them work their way through the complexity of the political maze. Bud felt that the law should be clearly written and that the citizens should not have to hire a Harvard attorney and spend their life savings to gain justice. let his start with the prisoner apprenticeship program and was saddened by the fact that prisoners were now being denied the education that would give them the tools to succeed in society, thus setting them up for failure on release. Bud spoke for those who did not have a strong voice in the political procedure, the handicapped, the homeless, and the incarcerated. His compassion for people was a very strong focus during his lifetime, but also took up a cause later in life that the most politically correct would not touch, which was false allegations. Knowing that the devastation of these accusations could destroy a life, even though the person was innocent, he did not choose to use criminal activity for a popular political platform. He knew there were many other issues to work on, which were for the betterment of the citizens. Bud should be remembered and honored, as he was a true gentleman, a very respected citizen, very informed, and a good friend who put forth his every effort on behalf of all the people he came in contact with. And I also would like to thank Maggie for her efforts and continued concern for her constituents.
Thank you. Mr. Oster and Miss Hart.
If you both like to come forward.
I'm sure nobody up there will object if I cut this a little bit shorter than I had written down.
If you could just state your name again for the record.
My husband and I, my name, by the way, is Selma Hartley. My husband and I met the buyers after Bud had retired from being a legislator, but he didn't stop there. This resolution honoring Bud is very impressive. However, the accomplishments listed are only the tip of the iceberg. Bud did not retire from representing the people when he was no longer a legislator. Instead, he devoted his life to helping others. There are many people who enter the public arena and gain a great deal from it, but Bud was a champion of the people, a citizen legislator, a true statesman. He was constantly helping others. As a matter of fact, that's how we met him, when a family in our area was falsely accused. Without his assistance, many innocent people would be in prison because of their lack of knowledge. Even though he had a very serious heart condition, he devoted much of his time during the last few years trying to get a videotaping bill passed to protect the children. There's so many things he did for people, too many to even list. He visited those in prison, worked for his church to gather food for those less fortunate, worked with his lodge to raise money, helped countless people who came for assistance, and on and on. He suffered ridicule many times. He never raised his voice in anger or retaliated in any way. Instead, he quietly went about the task at hand and held no malice toward his tormentors. He was respected and liked by all those who knew him, whether a world-famous doctor he met at a conference, a U.S. senator, or the family living in a shack on the other side of town. Bud was a real American hero in every sense of the word. Thank you for honoring him. Nobody deserves it more.
Mr. Oster.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Floyd Oster, and I would like to express my appreciation to Senator Mayhew and Representative Jeff Crump for his introducing of Senate Concurrent Resolution 11. I would also like to thank the committee for the opportunity to testify here. If I could have but two or three friends, Bud would be one of them. Bud, like me, is a person whose cell phone number you kept handy, the kind of people who kept campaign promises and are there to help with communication problem with the state agency or government office. You're the old-fashioned kind of politician, the one who could pick up a phone and rattle a bureaucracy cage and get results. We all know the problem is not that there isn't enough government, but there's too darn much. During Bud's first campaign, he advocated fairness of mind and 100% representation for the people of Linn County. During the following 10 years he served in the legislature, he has shipped resources and power to rural Oregon, not only helping his rural constituents, but rural Oregon also. For his many kindnesses, good deeds, and assistance to his fellow men, We appreciate and wish to honor Bud Bonner.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much for your testimony. We have no one else signed up. We will close the public hearing on SCR 11. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll move SCR 11 to the floor with our staff recommendation.
Has opened the work session, and he has just moved SCR 11 to the floor with the Duke's recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none, or could you please call the roll?
Aye.
Having the required number of votes, SCR 11 passes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Krupp, I believe, will be requested, and that's okay with the chair. Representative Krupp will be carrying. Thank you. Confer this for a moment here.
Yeah, we have some folks that
Okay. We'll open a hearing on HCR 10. Okay. Mr. Wilhelm and Ms. Wimmer, please come forward. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gary Wilhelms. I work on the Senate President's staff. I'm here today as an individual, however, and a former state representative from House District 53 in Klamath County, which was the home of former state representative Carol Howe, which House Concurrent Resolution 10 is intended to honor. First of all, I'd like to thank you all for spending your time to hear the resolutions honoring these former members. I think it's important. Maybe someday all of you and the rest of us will be in a similar situation. I did have the pleasure to serve with both Representative Byers and Representative Burroughs, who you've already acknowledged in this meeting. I did not have the pleasure of serving with Representative Howe, but he was a mentor of mine when I was in Klamath County as a freshman representative. I won't take much of your time because I think the resolution speaks for itself. But Carroll was a partisan and he was a conservative, but he was a fair and deeply respected member of the legislature by both sides of the aisle. He was credited with being a co-author of the school distribution formula, which served the state of Oregon for about two decades, and I wish we had it back today. There really isn't a whole lot that I can, like I said, say about Carroll. He distinguished himself in two ways, though. He was an educator's educator. Started out as a classroom teacher, became a principal, became the school superintendent, and along the way coached the state championship football team in Class A, I believe it was at the time. I think from Henry High School in Klamath County. And also was a noted lecturer and author, having written about six books on Native American culture in the Pacific Northwest. My wife and I were both proud to have known the Howes when we were in Klamath County, and I hope that I am able to carry a copy of this resolution to his widow sometime in the near future in Klamath County. But I once again appreciate your time in considering this this memorial, and would be happy to answer any questions if you have.
Thank you very much. Jerome's here, spending time in Klamath County. I'm noticing here on line 9, do you have any experience with regards to line 9 in locating the snipe in Klamath County?
I've only, Mr. Chair, We discussed whether we should include this in the memorial, but I have to tell you that Carol Howe was famous for two humorous things, at least two humorous things when he was here. One of them was the story of Snipe, who he would launch into this story inadvertently on the House floor until the Speaker of the House would gavel him down, and then he would pick up sometime a week later or 10 days or 2 weeks later with the same story, and he would launch off in another direction until he was gaveled down again by the Speaker of the House. And then he did this all session long. He did it for six sessions. He never finished the story.
Mr. Chair, can we start? Well, I don't want to give Representative Addison any ideas.
Mr. Chair, I think it's absolutely fitting that we know the full story of what we're about to vote on. And not only an example of the Snipe story, but perhaps if Representative Beck or myself find ourselves the subject of a House concurrent resolution, I hope there would be some reference to something that's creative and funny to the process of the Snipe. Also, I'd like to know that I have seen a Snipe and caught a Snipe, and I'll gladly take any members of the committee who'd like to come with me.
Any additional comments or questions from Mr. Wilhelm?
Chairman?
Yes, Representative.
Minor technical point, if I may. Archaeologists. Line 12. That seems to be the archaic spelling of archaeologist.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it A-R-C-H-E-O? They got the A.
Oh.
Is it either?
Look, you're right.
Yes, Representative Kennedy.
With all the respect to my good friend, your attorney. I think the message is fairly clear.
I would be embarrassed to have a resolution printed and given to somebody's widow only to find that we misspelled the word.
Representative Simmons, Representative Manick, could we staff, I think, is checking.
You want us to check with legal counsel?
That's not spelled the normal way for archaeologists, and I don't know why.
Mr. Chair, our able committee staff is a professional anthropologist. Would you care to verify the spelling for us, please?
That is the way the
archaeologist
spells.
Wow.
Right. Right. Next, hearing from the authority in the building, probably.
I had a question from my good colleague next to me here about sniping, and I didn't realize snipe had a capital S.
Yeah, thought that was.
Well, this is Harris.
Oh, Harris.
Snipe.
Representative Beck, before I lose control entirely, I'd like to remind the members of the committee we have about 7 minutes to do one additional resolution after this. So, if there are any additional questions. Mr. Wimmer, would you please proceed?
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jeffrey Todd Wimmer. I'm legislative assistant and policy analyst for Representative Harper in the House Majority Office. I'm here on his behalf. He wished to express regards for the chair and the members of the committee, and also ask you to join him in expressing our esteem and regard for the memory of the Honorable Carol Howe, and extending our condolences to our late colleague's wife of 64 years, Marjorie, her son, George, and their grandchildren, Lauren and Daniel. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Thanks for your testimony. No one else here to testify on HCR 10. I'll close the public hearing. Open the work session. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll move HCR 10 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. We do have a motion. Move it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Beck?
Aye.
Representative
Beck?
Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? Aye.
Representative
Beck? having the required number of votes, HBR 10 moves to the floor. Do we have a carrier, or would Representative Harper prefer to carry? Representative Harper will be the carrier. Open a hearing on SJR 34. Mr. Romano, will you please come forward?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm not here representing MCI or the beer and wine distributors or anybody else you normally see me up here representing. And contrary to the Oregonian, beer and wine distributors really have no position on this particular bill. It's a slight attempt at a joke. SJR 34 was introduced by Senator Starr, who was approached by Inez Weissman, who asked him to put the resolution in. It does a very simple thing. It just sends a message to Congress that the Oregon legislature supports action already taken by the President and Congress in 1995 in passing the Jerusalem Embassy Relocation Implementation Act. It's appropriate that we take this action just after the 51st birthday of the modern state of Israel, the reincarnation of the state that has existed for over 3,000 years. Jerusalem is the capital of the state of Israel. It became the capital 3,000 years ago when King David united the 12 tribes and chose for his capital a high point of ground not controlled by any of those 12 tribes. In this way, he united the people. The United States of America has diplomatic relations with 184 countries in the world. We have our embassy in the capital of 183 of those countries. The only country where our embassy is not located in the city chosen by that capital, or that country as its capital, is the state of Israel. The land designated for the United States Embassy is on land that has been part of the modern state of Israel since 1948. This is not land captured in 1967. Senate Joint Resolution just supports the bipartisan action taken by the President and Congress, and it is appropriate that we, in a bipartisan fashion, support the strong U.S.-Israel relationship and supports the move of our embassy to the capital city of Israel, Jerusalem. Thank you. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, Mr. Romaine? Let's stand there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a whimsical question. Have you registered as an agent of a foreign power?
Mr. Romaine, you do not have to answer the questions if the tribe have a tendency to incriminate you.
I do want to
close. Does the chair have some information about Mr. Romaine who let you serve with?
Representative Simmons, no, I do not. Please proceed, Mr. Simmons.
I do have.
Okay.
I was just kidding. That's why I prefaced it. But Congress has some arcane law when you are representing a foreign government, you have to register as an agent of a foreign power, and that's indicating obviously it's not.
I should tell you, I do wear a number of different hats. I am the chair of the Oregon chapter of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, which is commonly called APAC, and I am on the National Executive Committee for APAC, and I do an extensive amount of lobbying on international affairs. So I don't get paid for it, though.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, Simon. What's kind of
Edwards? Why hasn't this been built since this first objection anyway?
Mr. Chair, Representative Starr, that's the $64,000 question, and we're still waiting.
This will be what tips it over.
Right, this will be the straw that we hope. No, actually, if you've read the Oregonian today, even there was an article regarding this particular issue. It really hinges on this seems to be a country where the United States really likes to sort of play in the middle of internal politics, and in fact, that's what's going on right now. They're probably, to be very frank with you, if the Likud government under Benjamin Netanyahu ends up winning the election, there probably will not be a move to move the embassy. The Clinton administration has in the act a waiver provision which they may implement. If it's the Labor government under Iraq, it'll probably end up being moved. That's really the political realities out there. We, those of us who believe in a strong U.S.-Israel relationship and believe this is the right thing to do, the right message to send, will continue to pressure through Congress and through our elected representatives, as we are doing here.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for bringing this to us. Just, could you just for the record state why Tel Aviv was chosen in the first place and why that should continue to be a problem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, I was, I'm giving away my age. I was 1 year old when the state of Israel, the modern state, was created. And so I don't know the original reason for choosing it. My guess is that it was because Jerusalem itself was, if you're familiar with the geography of the state of Israel, the state that was, that came out of the war for independence, in effect, the road to Jerusalem was a very narrow strip, and it was very tenuous, the control over that area. And frankly, one never knew how long the control would last. And fortunately, over the last 51 years, the control has solidified a wee bit, and so it's very appropriate to move the embassy. It's become a political issue, really. That's really what it amounts to.
Just a 30-second remark, and I was proud to support the resolution regarding independence and regard to East Timor and the human rights issues, and I appreciate Mr. Romain bringing this to us. And anytime we can show support for a truly democratic society, I think it's important. Thank you.
Any additional questions from Mr. Romain? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please, we have no one else. I will close the hearing on SJR 34 and open a work session on SJR 34.
Yes. I move SJR 34 to close the BPAS recommendation.
Okay. Do you have a motion? Is there any discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Atkinson?
Aye.
Representative Beck?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative
Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Representative Griswold?
Excuse.
Representative Carr?
Aye.
Representative Welch? Aye.
Representative Williams?
Aye.
Churchill?
Aye.
Having the required number of votes, SJR 34 moves to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Would one of the sponsors want to carry? Representative Edwards?
Yes.
Representative Edwards will carry. Can the committee stand by for just a second? I'll confer with you.
Yes. If the committee will indulge us, we'll go back into 3516. It's going to be remaining on the agenda today. And when we left it on Tuesday, we were debating a couple of points, both the $100 reporting requirement in the original bill and the DASH-3 amendments, the electronic reporting. There was some discomfort with the electronic reporting, so we'd set it over and let the committee members visit among themselves. Representative Devlin has been visiting with the various members of the committee about possibly conceptually changing the minimum threshold by which you're required to report and extending the date where it would be required by another 2 or 4 years. And Representative Devlin, you want to give us an update then on that DASH-3 amendment?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, just to reiterate that the DASH-1 amendments are now dead. The DASH-1 amendments are now dead. There doesn't appear to be much controversy about the DASH-2 amendments, which we transferred into the bill. The DASH-3 amendments, I think I've talked to virtually every member of the committee, and I only have one holdout still.
Mr. Chairman, it's not a poison pill, a phrase I've heard a lot from actually.
But the number of the people that were uncomfortable are more comfortable in voting for it if we raise the limit within the DASH-3 to 50,000 versus 10,000, where it would become mandatory, and set the date at which it would become mandatory, and that you could not get an extension from the Secretary of State to 2004 versus 2002 from electronic filing requirements.
First, I would ask for unanimous consent for a conceptual amendment to the DASC amendment.
See no objection, Richard Devlin?
Yes. So the DASC amendment, if just every place that it mentions within the amendment, $10,000, replace that with the figure of $50,000, and every place that mentions within the amendment January 1st, 2002, replace that with January 1st, 2004.
That would be then on page 1, line 15, the 10,000 goes to 50,000.
And on page 2, on line 15, 20, and 21.
Mm-hmm. 15, 20, and 21.
And is there any other reference?
Hey, colleagues, you've heard the, heard the motion.
If I could have a... explanation, what is the rationale of moving it from 2002 to 2004?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, the rationale that some people wanted the longer phase-in period at which time it would become mandatory, it's actually the rationale between getting 7 or 8 votes on the bill or getting 11 votes on the bill going to the floor. That's the rationale.
They have advocate
in 2004. If I may, I actually am one of those advocates for the computer challenged. But it seems that allowing some additional time allows the computer challenged elements of our society to adapt to modern electronic warfare. Excuse me, electronic warfare.
I don't know.
I'm not uncomfortable with it. But in the members that I talked to, one of the aspects of this is it would allow two complete election cycles to go through. It would also allow, should there be any issues about it, two complete legislative sessions. So.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may?
Yes.
I don't think this will prohibit the Secretary of State in the meantime from setting up a voluntary system of electronic filing. It simply delays the phase-in of the mandatory electronic filing. And in this fashion, the Secretary of State can set up a voluntary system and say, folks, it's coming, so you might as well get in line or online.
Excuse me, Representative Manning. I made that mistake twice in the hearing room so far, discussion. But I believe we would need to pass this amendment, adopt it, in order to kind of be in the set of wheels in motion to have electronic filing at some point in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I could have supported the 2002, but I don't think it's unreasonable to give an additional 2 years for implementation of the electronic filing, as you stated. I mean, we can move towards it immediately with the passage of this bill, and people can voluntarily start to file. Certainly, that's going to be my preference, if given the opportunity to do that. But I don't think it's unreasonable to allow people some chance to ramp up with that. And so I'll support the conceptual amendment.
Well, I think I stated the other day that this is something that we should have been working on 4-6 years ago. And I think the longer we extend the dates out, the longer people, the agency, candidates, the campaign managers, treasurers, put off implementing it. I think I would argue to the committee that while I'm willing to go with the $50,000 threshold, I think that's one compromise these amendments I'm willing to live with, but I think we ought to stick with the 2002 date and get the agency onto it and get kick ourselves and get on with it. And if by next session we're not quite ready, then at that point let the next rules committee change the date. I think we need to push this thing.
Lieutenant Gardner and then of course Mr. Manning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would disagree with my colleague. Only in the fact, I mean, the computer system is not up yet. It is, you know, the program is not proven, it's not run, and I believe my comment the other day was I'd probably feel more comfortable with 2020, but 2004, I think is what I'm very comfortable with the
Well, if it helps, and I'm just throwing out the idea, you could talk about a two-stage financial shift. So you could say
$75,000 or more, 2002, $50,000 or more, 2004, but maybe it makes life too complicated. I'm willing to go along with any kind of phase-in that's reasonable, and the phase-in that's suggested here works. Again, it doesn't say that you can't have a voluntary system. And does it prohibit a voluntary system?
No.
So people will know it's coming, and that'll ramp them up.
I would like the members of the committee to know that we are maybe subject to a call or an email.
Right. I understand. This is an important issue. I guess I'm more concerned about the Secretary of State's office than candidates. I think candidates are sophisticated enough and will rise to the occasion. And we have entered the modern world, and if we have campaign treasurers who haven't, I'm sure we are all capable of finding them who can. If the problem is we're not pushing the agency hard enough, they're always putting it off. I don't see that as a criticism to Secretary of State's office. I guess it is half criticism. We need to push them, and this is not pushing them. We all need kicks in the fanny every once in a while, and I think that office needs one. They need to be able to go.
Duly noted. Okay.
Well, but a 2004 is just too easy to not get in gear and make it a top priority in their work plan.
This is Beyer.
Mr. Chair, I would respectfully like the good representative from Portland to read the bill. Section of the amendment, Section 8, requires that if anyone wants to be waived from this, you have to go ask. The Secretary of State's office is going to be required to have this done. And a candidate that wants to get out of it has to go to them and ask to be excused. This does not give them a chance to not do it. This requires them to do it. And the candidate, such as myself, who may want to drag our feet, has to go and initiate the waiver.
But if I can, maybe I'm missing something, Mr. Chair.
Just a bit.
By when is the Secretary of State going to be required to establish the system? By 2004, under these amendments?
No.
Or earlier? Maybe I'm wrong.
No. Mr. Chairman, a waiver would not be available after 2004. That's the basic situation that you have with this conceptual amendment. Prior to that date, a waiver could be granted. And also, I believe there is an effective date somewhere. If Ms. Seelock would like to check the date.
Ms. Seelock, please.
There is an effective date within the bill for when.
Chair Simmons, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Colleen Seelock. I'm the elections director of the Secretary of State's office. We believe Section 8, as it is written, does allow some headroom for the Secretary of State under the belief that it is impractical or creates undue hardship for you to ask to complete. We are very close to having this program completed, but it has not been beta tested. That's what we hope to accomplish in the very near future. We're trying to write this program in a way written in ASCII with a tab delineated file download so that are delimited. That way you all don't have to buy a special product or a product from us. You can use the current software you have available. And almost every program from Access to Quicken would allow you to download this in a way that we could then accept it. So we have been working diligently despite some of our efforts, primarily because of other things that impact campaign finance from Ballot Measure 9. We were very close to having that program ready when Ballot Measure 9 was thrown out by the court, so we had to totally rewrite the program. So we believe Section 8 does have a little bit of headroom in there if it is practicable for us to have it implemented in the year 2000.
Here comes the call.
But Representative Meyer,
I'm just going to clarify this. The whole point is, what we really have is a system that goes into place. It's obligated to happen as of January 1 of 2000, but you have an opt-out. I shouldn't have called it voluntary because it sounds like you bought in. No, you have to be opted out. That gives the Secretary of State. But that really means you're moving in, and that has people having to go to the Secretary of State to get out of it. And we're just saying that the opt-out disappears in 2004.
Come on. All right.
Are we at our call?
We're at our call, but Representative Manager turned the first bell.
And we're in the middle of a work session. We're almost finished.
But I'm carrying the first bill, so I'd better sort of censor that.
Okay, well, yeah.
But you don't need me for this. I have my blessing.
Well, thank you so much for doing that.
And
we'll be up there just momentarily.
Okay.
So, you get to restate your motion.
Okay, this is for the
Daffrey Amendment.
The Daffrey Amendment. On page 1, replacing line 15 where it says 10,000 with 50,000. On page 2, on lines 15, 20, and 21, where it says January 1st, 2002, January 1st, 2004.
Okay, colleagues, you've heard the motion and you've should be noted in your hopefully in your copies of the Dash Amendment. Representative Starr?
I have a question. Does this, I wasn't here for the discussion earlier. I had to go to my other committee. What about situations where one candidate in a race files electronically or wants to, but the other candidate in a race wants to waiver? There's political reasons why they might, the guy that's filing electronically might not want to do that. Just for access to the information in a tight political race for some reason. Would this amendment allow for the person to seek the waiver?
My understanding, Representative Starr, is that it would.
Yes, it would actually to seek the waiver. And my understanding also is that really the only advantage to this, other than the fact that there's an advantage to the Secretary of State's office in that it's probably easier to audit the information if it's transferred electronically. It's probably easier to make it accessible to the public. But we also know that the paper CNEs that are now turned in can also be viewed by the public after they're turned in. And usually we also know, to be very frank, that our respective political organizations are reviewing those the minutes after they come in or as they come in during the day to review.
I'd like to add that it potentially could reflect negatively on the candidate who does not file electronically, being somewhat perhaps less sophisticated than one who does file electronically. But I think in keeping faith with the voters and full disclosure, this facilitates that. And it would be, I think, viewed positively by my members of the public. Further discussion? Any objection?
To conceptually amend.
Hearing none, the Daffrey Amendments are conceptually amended.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, this is Devlin.
Will you entertain a motion now to adopt the conceptually amended Daffrey Amendment?
Yes, I will. We have a motion before us to adopt the conceptually amended Daffrey Amendments into House Bill 3516. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so moved. And now the other question before us today, colleagues, is the
Daffrey.
The Daffrey that we've previously adopted.
Is that correct, Kevin?
Okay.
And we had the $100 question in the original bill. Neither of the amendments delete the language in the original bill. It has a $100 as opposed to $50 reporting requirement for aggregate amounts. And Representative Devlin, you want to brief us on that?
Okay. I've discussed that with virtually, I think, almost every member of the committee. There are probably two or three people on the committee that are comfortable with that. Also, in discussing it with Ted Ruttlinger, legislative counsel, who normally does DLT for this committee, that amount was set in place in 1975, so it has not been adjusted since 1975. I'm willing to go with, it was never my intent. I only put it in the bill to get the relating clause to have a holding place for elections-related bills. It's whatever the desire of the committee is, keep it or take it out. If we don't take it out, we will have to conceptually just ask that what's the terminology for it? Conflict amendments be drafted at the same time relating to bills that we've already passed out that list the $50 amount.
We'll probably have a policy question before us and a disclosure question
the public has gotten used to in some degree, the $50 reporting requirement. Candidates for statewide offices currently have this $100 reporting requirement. And so I would submit it to you for discussion. Mr. Gardner?
Mr. Chair, I'd fully support taking out the bracket and keeping it at $50 limit. I think that the public has given us a lot of sentiment that they're in favor of disclosure, and I think in keeping with that, keeping it at the $50 limit would be the appropriate move.
Representative Williams?
Mr. Chairman, I think the evidence that Representative Dillon brought forward about the $50 amount being inserted in 1975 is kind of indicative of this issue. I frankly think that, like most things in this process, a walk into the 90s isn't an inappropriate thing to do. I would support, frankly, despite the fact that it wasn't his intent, I think Representative Devlin has struck upon a good idea, and I proudly support this bill as it was requested from the Legislative Council.
It's been 25 years ago, the $50 amendment.
Well, any discussion from the right point?
Mr. Chair.
What's in bed?
Well, it's true that the $50 note was adopted a long time ago. The impact of contributions in the political process has grown exponentially. And I think this is one of the few countervailing pieces we have is this low threshold for disclosure to, get some kind of disclosure for even small contributors. That only mitigates the impact of huge contributions into the system. But I just think it sends the absolute wrong signal right now to raise the bar but not address any of the more pressing problems in the campaign finance arena. I will vehemently oppose this bill if we do not, or if we make this change to the $100.
I sense some dissension on the committee with Ms. Starr.
I would just comment that I would support Representative Williams' statement on this. I mean, 25 years ago, $50 was significantly more than $50 today. And I don't know why I haven't heard a really good reason to leave it there. If we look at why 25 years ago, I think that there's a threshold by which people that contribute to be able to have some freedom from disclosure.
I have some disagreement, not dissension, excuse me there.
You said vehement. I can say that.
Vehement. Okay. Why don't we get it to a vote? Would you like to make a motion?
Okay, I'll make the motion. You want a motion to remove?
Yeah, to remove.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, from the bill as originally written, it will strike all boldface numbers in the bill and then strike all brackets within the bill because what happens, if I can explain
this,
because the limits before were $50 for like a Senate or a representative candidate and $100 for statewide, there's a lot of language in here that refers to both. So those things were taken out of the bill since you made it universally $100. So if we just strike all boldface and all brackets from the original bill, you have
$50
amount. Yes, the $50 amount. And the
$100. If you'd like to get returned to the $50 amount, you'd vote yes. If you want to see it go to $100, you'd vote no on the motion before us. Kevin, would you please call the roll?
Representative Atkinson?
Yes.
Representative Beck?
Yes.
Representative
Byer? Aye.
Representative
Edwards? Mr. Chairman, if I might indulge, I'll pass.
Okay.
Thank you, George. I mean, that's
nonsense. Come back to Mr. Gruffin Devlin, please.
No.
Representative Gardner?
Yes.
Representative Nash?
Excuse.
Representative Kempe?
Excuse.
Representative
Starr? No.
Representative
Welsh?
No.
Representative Williams?
No.
Chair Simmons?
No.
Either way, it doesn't pass.
Representative Devlin?
No. It has to have 7 votes to be
heard. Yeah.
can the majority of those present adopt the amendment?
No.
That's 7 votes.
I have them all.
So the motion passes then.
So the unamended with $100 is still in the current bill.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, if I may comment about this issue and the importance people want to give to it. I understand that I hear a lot of these sentiments about this figure. But realize, I'll give you an example. In the 96 election, I had over 1,000 individual contributors. I never had a question about one of those contributors and who has contributed. I reported and still continue to report even contributions as low as $5 in detail. But I think realistically the figure is set in $75. $100 right now for a contested legislative race buys the mail program for about 12 voters. That's what it buys. Probably in 75, it might have bought it for 60 voters. So if you want to see an effective impact, it's not much.
Well, so Devin, you could change your vote for purposes of reconsideration. We can come back to this on Tuesday.
Okay.
You have to do that? You lobby the members of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, whatever your preference is.
I'll
leave it up to you.
I'll leave it to the discretion of the committee. We have voted on it.
Mr. Chair,
yes, Mr. Beck.
Whatever it's worth, I will be filing notice of the minority report if we decide to vote the bill out today. And as far as, at least for now, that would be to lower it back to 50.
I would join you.
I just want to vote on that on the floor. But.
Mr. Chairman,
yes, minority report, Devlin.
All I do is.
Mr. Chairman, obviously, as was being pointed out, if I voted either way today, I wouldn't have changed the outcome here today. One of the realities of this process is we're trying to get two Senate bills that are important bills over two cents to get the max of the bill. I would be glad to wait till Tuesday and lobby my members, or I would be glad if there were members that had voted no on the previous motion to change their votes there and take the item out. It is not a particularly important item to me, and it's actually an item that we could insert in a half dozen bills that we're still going to consider.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just go on record and say, in the interest of moving what I think is a good bill forward, I will be willing to change my vote on the $1,500 issue. I frankly wouldn't mind seeing it come back in another bill, but I don't want to hold the bill process up. So if that means for purposes of this, since we're under call, we need to make a motion that we do change, I'll change my vote and serve possible notice of reconsideration if that's what's necessary in order to have the bill come back up on Tuesday. But I was on the winning side.
Why can't do this? You can't do that.
Serves better.
Yeah. Well, the noes won, but the motion did not carry.
There's no winners.
So what we have
another motion. What
are the
same thing
again?
Another
motion?
Yeah,
make another motion. Okay. Mr. Chairman, as stated earlier, I move to remove all the boldface items within the bill and to remove all the brackets from the bill, which will effectively put the pre-existing limit back within the bill.
Okay. Are we understand the motion?
Yep. For the good of all the people that are going to come down and determine who my $62 contributors are.
We voted this once and the motion to remove all that failed, but we didn't have 7 votes. So we can't carry it.
Okay.
So where we're at now is we have the bill as written before us still.
Right.
With the $100 in.
With $100 in.
Right.
He's remaking the motion.
Remaking the motion. I did. I remove all the boldface items from the bill, all the boldface two numbers in the bill, mentioned twice. Then remove all the brackets from the bill, which is removing all of the
restoring
it to the
restoring
the original. That's the motion.
Okay. recording current law.
He thinks the motion will carry this time.
He's your candidate, so.
I don't know if
you
can do that.
Mr. Chair, you can certainly do that by the motion to reconsider the vote by which you failed to pass the previous motion.
This is the motion to reconsider, then it takes two-thirds to bring it up for immediate reconsideration.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Chairman, just, I don't want to take this on any longer, but there has to be from somebody on the...
It has to come from the
president. I'm sorry, I said the president is.
Sorry?
I make the motion.
I'm glad to talk it out. Mr. Starr has made a motion that we suspend the rules for purposes of reconsidering the vote by which we failed to amend the House Bill 3516 in its original form.
And Mr. Chairman, I would move that we immediately reconsider that motion.
Okay, we take two-thirds votes at first, okay? First, we take the affirmative vote for the motion to reconsider. The suspension takes two-thirds, but we're not there yet. Okay. Right. Well, is there any objection? Hearing none, so moved.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I move that we immediately reconsider.
Okay. The motion that we immediately reconsider the vote by which we failed to restore the original language into House Bill 3516. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so moved.
I make it, Mr. Chairman. From the original bill, remove all boldface and remove all brackets restoring the original law.
All righty. Because you've heard the motion, so once again, voting yes restores the current law. Voting no would change it to $100 limit. Do you understand that?
That means
okay. Kevin, please call the roll.
No.
Hi.
Representative Byers?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
I will vote aye, and the reason is to move the bill.
Representative Gargan?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Representative Starr? No. Representative Welch? No. Representative Williams? Aye. Oh, Harrison? Where are we at? We need to vote aye. Motion carries. Okay. Now we need to vote. Mr. Chairman? Yes.
I move House Bill 3516 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended and conceptually amended.
Cause there motion of force to move House Bill 3516 amended and conceptually amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so moved. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, in the spirit of Representative Beck's suggestion, I'm happy to stand outside the chamber and give anyone a kick in the fanny who's interested.
We are adjourned.
We didn't need a roll call.
Well, I believe we've been doing unanimous. Okay.